Good morning. Welcome to the virtual Sunday service of the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, affectionately known as WUF. My name is Kim Transier. My pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader on this merely warm summer day. I was reading that this week's heat wave took dozens of lives in Multnomah County alone, and I hope you are okay. And I want you to know that you are welcome here, wherever and however you may be at this moment. Whether the heat brought you tragedy or a nice day at the coast, whether you spent those days splashing in a fountain or resting or worrying, or suffering, or working, you are welcome here. And if you're a virtual visitor from another region, and you know what I'm talking about only because the name Portland got back in your headlines again this week, you too are welcome here. You're welcome here if the 4th of July means to you a joyful celebration. And you're welcome here if the 4th of July brings up bitter reflections. And you're welcome here if the 4th of July is just the 3rd of July plus one day. Please check the announcements that were attached to your order of service email that you got this morning, and you can see what else is happening at WUF this week. If you're new to us, you didn't get that email, and if you'd like to be more connected, please contact our congregational administrator, whose contact information will appear on your screen after the service. Now, in a moment, I'm going to light our chalice, the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith. And I will invite you to consider these words excerpted from a poem called The Bright Thread of Hope by Gretchen Haley. There is too much beauty in this world to give up on it yet, and it is always too soon to surrender to cynicism. Bring your doubt, your skepticism, your downright confusion, even your bitterness. But in the midst of all these, in the center, wrap your tender fingers around that still bright thread of hope. For this hour we come to celebrate, to praise, to give thanks, to refuse to give up, to steady ourselves, keepers of hope, brave builders of this still possible world. Join with me now in speaking our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Thank you.
Today's service is called We the People, and we are so happy to have as our speaker Reverend Connie Yost, a member of the Wolf Congregation. Reverend Connie currently serves as president of the board of the Farm Worker Ministry Northwest, and she serves on the board of the National Farm Worker Ministry. She is the founder and coordinator of the nonprofit ministry Friends Stay Warm, which supports low-wage workers and immigrant detainees through cash assistance and advocacy. She provides support and advocacy for workers' rights and is passionate about ending economic inequality. Reverend Connie also serves as a trained spiritual director, preacher, teacher, activist, and minister of rites of passage. Since 2019, she has been an affiliated community minister with WOOF. Welcome, Connie.
Our reading today is from Parker Palmer's book called Healing the Heart of Democracy. I am no stranger to this democracy's moments of peril, which have been precipitated by Democrats and Republicans alike. I lived through McCarthy's communist witch hunts, the pushback to the civil rights movement, the political assassinations of the 1960s, the burning of our cities, Vietnam, the Pentagon Papers, Watergate, and the electoral debacle of 2000. I have witnessed the rapid erosion of the middle class and the growing power of big money, an oligarchy of wealth to trump the will of the people. But with fear and fragmentation becoming staples of our national life, democracy feels even more imperiled to me in America. As our distrust of the other beyond our borders hardened and we began making aliens of each other, a we that included me, I fell into a spiral of outrage and despair. How did we forget that our differences are among our most valuable assets? What happened to we have nothing to fear but fear itself? When will we learn that violence in the long run creates at least as many problems as it solves? Why do we not value life, every life, no matter whose or where? Or understand that the measure of national greatness is not only how successful the strong can be, but how well we support the weak? And where have we the people gone? We who have the power to reclaim democracy for its highest purposes, unless we allow ourselves to be divided and conquered by the enemy within and among us.
Dream.
Let us enter together a moment of silence for prayer, meditation, or reflection. You might bring to mind or speak aloud the names of those you would invite to join us in a silent circle of peace and compassion.
The river is flowing,
flowing and
growing.
The river is
flowing
down
to the sea.
Reverend Connie Yost, an affiliated community minister here at West Hills UU Fellowship. It's good to be with you this morning. And happy 4th of July. 245 years ago, our founding fathers signed the documents that established American democracy, complete with the checks and balances that would prevent the accumulation of power in the hands of a single person. They had experienced firsthand the abuses of concentrated power at the hands of Britain's King George III, and thus set up the three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. Well, these days, we face many threats to our American democracy, beginning with confusion over whether we are, in fact, a democracy. The terms democracy and republic are much used and debated, their definitions evolving over time, and they're not mutually exclusive. George Thomas, professor of American political institutions at Claremont McKenna College, explains that we are a representative democracy, with each state given equal representation in the Senate and representation based on population in the House of Representatives and in the Electoral College used for presidential elections. George Thomas tells us that American constitutional design can best be understood as an effort to establish a sober form of democracy. It did so by embracing representation, the separation of powers, checks and balances, and the protection of individual rights, all concepts that were unknown in the ancient world, where democracy had earned its poor reputation. But it was Abraham Lincoln who, in the Gettysburg Address in 1863, eloquently outlined a vision of American democracy that went far beyond the limited view of the Founding Fathers, when he declared that America shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Lincoln moved us into a true vision of we, the people, all the people. George Thomas writes that Lincoln offered a definition of popular government that can guide our understanding of a democracy or a republic today. A majority held in restraint by constitutional checks and limitations and always changing easily with deliberate changes of popular opinions and sentiments is the only true sovereign of a free people. Well, this is the democracy we aspire to, but we know how flawed this arrangement can be in actual practice. The Electoral College has given us 5 presidents who lost the popular vote. In recent history, George W. Bush in 2000 and Donald Trump in 2016. Senators from states with small populations have as much voting power in this as senators representing large populations. And the Supreme Court is made up of 9 unelected judges, politically appointed for life, who can overturn any law. The filibuster is used to prevent legislation from coming to a vote in the Senate. American democracy is not perfect, and constitutional reform is needed and should be ongoing as further checks and balances of any abuse of power. Well, friends, we know that there are many threats to our democracy. On July 4th, 1776, news traveled slowly over long distances by horseback or ship. Today, we are bombarded by a seemingly endless stream of news about these threats. Today, we are seeing a resurgence in voting rights abuses. There is violence and threats of violence, runaway inequality, big money in politics, white nationalism, religious nationalism, lies being touted as truth, and politicians who will go along with the lies in order to be elected. But the biggest threat to our democracy, and the one I want to focus on today, is fear. In a 2009 4th of July sermon, I said, "Our founding fathers knew that fear is the most dangerous enemy of democracy, because when people live in fear, they often give up their right to govern themselves to someone powerful, someone who promises strength and offers them safety, security, and freedom." Gee, does anyone come to mind? Fear is human. It is understandable. It is something we need to have compassion for ourselves and others about. There's a lot going on in our world that can lead us to be fearful. Crises abound. Environmental, global health, human rights, economic, social, political, and the plain old vanilla, man's inhumanity to man. Who doesn't want to find some safety, security, and freedom in the midst of all of this? Many people find their safety and security in their religion, many of which share the same values as we do as Unitarian Universalists. But fear of the other can drive certain people to distort religion and use it as a justification for violence or oppression. For instance, a minority of Christians and others subscribe to the myth that America was founded as a Christian nation, thus justifying a push to make America great again, that is, white, male, and fundamentalist Christian. As a UU Christian, I join with the many Christians who affirm that our democracy was founded on the separation of church and state, and that people of all faiths and none have the right and responsibility to engage constructively in the public square. Further, I join with the many Christians who affirm justice and equality for all people. Our founding fathers were concerned about minority mob rule. That certainly came home to us on January 6th. Those images of a mob storming the U.S. Capitol are images of hate, which sear the heart and awaken our deepest memories and fears of our vulnerability and stoke our outrage and anger. A new study by the University of Chicago shows that fear of the other, namely Latinx immigrants, may be a main driver of those who stormed the Capitol. In that study, plus one conducted by Les Leopold on Trump voters in 2020 in Pennsylvania, the data shows that many of these folks live in counties that are experiencing an increase in the Latinx population. It's this fear of the other, even stoked to violence. It is fear of truth and accountability and their own electability that allows legislators to not only block the For the People Act for much needed voting rights, but also to refuse to support an independent outside commission to thoroughly investigate the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. This fear of truth is a grave threat to our democracy. Our democracy requires that we be a people who seek truth and accountability in our elected leaders and in ourselves. For as much as we are sure of the correctness of our own values and opinions, we need to notice how fear plays out in our own lives. Can we listen and be in conversation with others who vote differently from us? Can we seek understanding and compassion when others think differently from us? Can we offer reconciliation and forgiveness when the going gets tough? We all need a place where we can offer up our fears and restore our soul so we can participate in the life of our democracy. As Unitarian Universalists, we are well situated to find that safety, security, and freedom in the values and community of our faith. Our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, affirms our interbeing with all of life. We are a people who are not above creation nor any people. We are with all of creation in this evolving thing called life. Love is our call to action, our foundation, and our aspiration. Process theology informs my view that we co-create our world with the creative life force I call God. You don't have to. Call it spirit, goddess, love, or nothing at all. I believe that with consciousness, we can participate in the co-creation of a world that is dynamically moving in the direction of greater love, truth, beauty, and justice. But to do this, we need some support in the community of our faith, but also deep within ourselves. This is what a spiritual practice is all about, helping us keep centered and loving despite the onslaught of our personal and collective tragedies and failings. We must always find our safety, security, and freedom first within ourselves before we act for others. An act is what we must do. Our democracy depends on it. Life depends on it. Let us reclaim and proclaim democracy for its highest purposes, ensuring equality and justice for all. For all, we, the people, united as one. Amen, and blessed be.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where the forests are fertile, where the water and wind run clean and clear, and community matters more than possessions. Come share this land, let's build it right here. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
One more time.
As members of a community, we at WWF are shaded by trees we did not plant and refreshed by wells we did not dig. At this time, we pause to reflect on the gifts we receive and the gifts we have to offer. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful, even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Yeah.
words of John Lewis, democracy is not a state. It is an act, and each generation must do its part by getting in what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. May it be so.
As we conclude our time together today, I extinguish the flame of our chalice, but not the flame we carry within us as we go forth into the world.